Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. I am so looking forward to heading off to Russell Brand's Community Festival. If you're going to be there, definitely come and say hi. Really looking forward to being part of that, speaking on the Recover stage about being sober curious and about looking to, choosing an alcohol-free life and the benefits that it brings. And last week I mentioned that I did a webinar for NHS staff. I was thinking about it. One of the things that I'm most proud of from doing that, I'm super grateful to one of my sober coaches, Annie, who set it all up. But I'm just really grateful that there was the opportunity there to speak to quite a big number of people to raise awareness, possibly for the first time a lot of these people have ever really heard this concept of not needing to wait till you're at rock bottom, right? It can be brand new for most people. I certainly didn't realise, that there was a whole world out there of people who are recognising something has to change, but, they just don't know how. So rather than assess people, oh, well, are you at rock bottom? Okay, go to alcohol services. How about, stepping in earlier? And that was what was really, really good about that opportunity. In addition, of course, we were able to really lay down the law, as it were, on just how harmful alcohol was, with some very powerful slides created by Annie Knowles, and it really told it like it is, as if anyone already didn't know. But, well, I say that tongue in cheek. Of course, most of us don't. I certainly did not. I really did not realise how harmful alcohol was until I, finally got my head around Jason Vale's book or whichever was the first one I read. But it is so important to have that logic. You need that logic to support, because then after that, as I said in last week's podcast, the monkey mind goes off and finds all sorts of reasons why, yeah, but it's legal and it's fine and everyone else does it and I've been okay so far and all of that nonsense. And that was really brought into focus for me this week, because there was a great post on Instagram. I probably wouldn't have seen this otherwise, but a post by Mrs. D is Alcohol Free. I've interviewed her several times, Lotta, on the podcast. She's just such a great guest. So there's at least two podcasts with Lotta. You've probably read the book Mrs. D is Going Without and Mrs. D is Going Within. And there are others as well. She did a post which was flagging up a study done at, I think it's Otigi University, I hope I've got that name right, it was reported in the press that alcohol is the most harmful drug. So that was actually the headline, Otago University, that's it, yeah, I had written a note. So this is from New Zealand, of course, and they're basically saying, Kiwi researchers found that when separately considering harm to those who use it and harm to others, alcohol was the most harmful drug for the total population. Alcohol's position at the top of the ranked had it ahead of methamphetamine, is that how you say it? Good job, I'm not up on the drugs. Methamphetamine, synthetic cannabinoids, and tobacco. And then it goes on to say, while other global studies have ranked harm in a general population, it's believed this is the first to evaluate and rank psychoactive drug harm among society and young people, especially in New Zealand. So what a thing. One of the study's co-authors said, Dr. Rose Crossin said the findings will surprise some who may have assumed that other illegal drugs cause more harm than our most widely used legal drug. What a sentence that is. What a sentence. And isn't it time that this stuff gets out there? It's so time. What was really fascinating was that Mrs. D, Lotta, put this piece on Instagram. She did a screenshot of the study. I think she'd been speaking on radio or TV. They'd invited her to comment. And she put a screenshot of the article as it was told, the story as it was told in one of the newspapers in New Zealand, and directly under the article was a huge ad for alcohol. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Literally, where is that joined up thinking? It's very scary. Anyways, all of that follows on beautifully to introduce my guest today, who I mentioned to you last week. Susan Laurie is an author, and she's doing some very powerful work in exactly this area, looking at the harm that alcohol causes. But she has her own story, which, you know, I can tell you now, does hit rock bottom. So it's a really powerful piece. She's doing some fantastic work. So enjoy the interview. Susan, welcome. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you so much, Janie, for inviting me. It's a real pleasure.
And it was lovely to meet you a few weeks ago. We got to have a chat, which was really nice. So now what's really interesting here for me is that I, you know, of course, all the work I do pretty much is with people who are very much grey area drinkers. They've been drinking more than they want to. They never got to the rock bottom point, you know, for which I certainly for myself, I'm incredibly grateful. But your story is different. So really interesting to hear another perspective, and I think, you know, from what I've read, your story was quite dramatic. So take us back, if it's not too arduous to have to go there again, as it were.
Take you back to the 1980s and 1990s. It was quite arduous, and alcohol did, you know, almost cost me my life. But I think what I do try to get across is, you know, that I'm very lucky to be here, but as well as that, you know, that I don't use my story to scare people. It's more that, just because I'm just such an ordinary person, and, you know, in my head, I didn't fit the profile of somebody with an alcohol problem. I just always thought it would never happen to me.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that, you know, with alcohol, it does sort of creep up on you by stealth.
No, absolutely. I'm guessing I don't know what kind of age you were when all this was going on, but I'm guessing you had a kind of a career you were holding your life together.
Yeah. And I think like a lot of people, I started off, you know, at university. I wasn't one of these people that hung around parks in my teenagers years drinking. I started off at university, you know, loving a drink with my mates and thinking that it gave, you know, made me more fun and stuff. And then I became, you know, a professional. I worked for a long time in the pharmaceutical industry. That you know, there was a lot of drinking involved, conferences with champagne and gala dinners, stuff like that, just really ordinary. And I did, you know, I did love a drink, and I probably drank too much, more than was good for me, but I never sort of considered that I had a drink problem. Mm. And then when it did creep up, as some, you know, for some people it does.
Was there a kind of a reason for you, do you think, that kind of kickstarted the increase, as it were? Was there any kind of trauma or tragedy that you can look back at and think, actually, that's when it started to ramp up?
To be honest, Jenny, there wasn't. I think it was more, you know, things that I've learned since then, that, you know, you drink a bottle of wine a night, and then suddenly that isn't having the same effect. So then you go up to maybe, you know, a bottle and a bit a night, and it over time that just creeps up. It wasn't that anything dramatic happened in my life. And I think the fact that I could still hold down a job, and that I could, you know, still function. What I've always said about my drinking, that, you know, you kid yourself that it has some sort of plateau. And even when I was drinking sort of two bottles of wine a night, I was thinking, this is, you know, I'm still going to work and stuff, so this is obviously quite normal. And I'm still functioning, so I don't have a problem. It was that gradual creeping into my life, gradually getting a hold, and to the fact where, you know, people in my family, people who were around you all the time, they sort of don't notice as well. It's just when it starts to become a problem.
Yeah. That, I mean, when you did start to kind of think, oh, maybe there's something not right, did you seek out help? Did you kind of think of the going the traditional route? I mean, back then, of course, there wouldn't have been anything like the, you know, the huge wealth of stuff available now. So I guess your first thought was AA back then.
Well, even before that, my first thought was, you know, going to the GP and maybe thinking that I was a bit anxious. I didn't realise that, you know, a hangover has an element of anxiety attached to it. So I thought maybe I was a bit down going to my GP. I had lots of counselling. But yeah, definitely when I thought, you know, this is causing more problems in my life with my relationships and stuff, I did go down the traditional routes. And, you know, this is a long time ago, going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And exactly what you've just said, you know, that was like the go-to then. But like I said, it kept on moving, it progressed. It has a way of convincing you, you know, if I'd been going to Alcoholics Anonymous for a while, that I wasn't as bad as some people that I saw there.
Right.
I didn't have a problem. And just having, you know, right, I've scared myself now. I've got it under control. You know, I can go back to having to drinking with my friends and stuff socially. And that happened, you know, over and over again.
Yeah.
Until, you know, ultimately it really started to be causing big problems in my life, big problems in relationships, in being able to function and run my business at that time. But and then when that starts to happen, you've almost crossed a line where that I think once you've crossed over into dependence, people don't realize it sort of digs its claws in. When you start trying to, you know, be more serious about getting help.
So for you, was there an actual sort of physical impact? Did you have physical health issues? Was it what was going on?
I think the physical impact was more the withdrawal the really severe hangovers. The older you get, the worse they get. But it was definitely the withdrawal that impacted on me. It definitely impacting as well on my mental health too. So and also, you know, things like I've still got scars from falling over, you know, head injuries. I've got, you know, cuts and things. So in terms of, you know, hurting myself.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing to raise, actually, because I think people forget the extent to which, you know, our accident and emergency units are full every weekend of people with injuries, you know, linked to alcohol.
Yeah,
they're so bloody dangerous.
It is. So all along this journey, you know, I'd be trying to get help here and there. I'd be, you know, dabbling in Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, what a lot of people don't realize, especially, you know, for anyone who's got children, is if you've been to GP once, or you've been to GP a couple of times, there's this reluctance to keep going back.
Of course, because you don't want to be reported.
I would, you know, spend money on different stuff that I found as well. But then, you know, all the while, this dependence on alcohol is creeping up. I've always pictured it, for anyone who's seen the film Ghost, the dark shadows. And it sort of, the more that I realized I had a problem and tried to get help, it sort of, the more it tried to wrap itself around me.
And it
became really quite scary. To the point where I was, you know, at first I'd been volunteering to have help, and then, you know, maybe falling off the wagon to where, you know, you dragged kicking and screaming into rehab. And don't want to go. Right. So did
you do a kind of a residential kind of rehab?
I did a couple of those, both totally different as well. One very traditional, you know, around the 12 steps, and I was in there for, it was over 3 months. And, you know, you sent out with, you've got a toolkit, you know, do this, that, and the other, keep keep working it, and all of these tools, which, you know, were really helpful. And then the other rehab I was in was much more alternative and very much more spiritual. But yeah, I relapsed. You know, I managed to stay sober for quite a while, and the same with Alcoholics Anonymous. I had long periods of sobriety. But then in the end, you know, I became very, very ill. And that was the scariest time, because, you know, people around you for self-preservation, you fall in love with, you know, somebody, but you can't be in love with somebody who's actively.
Well, who isn't themselves. I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? When you're drinking, you actually are not yourself.
You're not yourself.
You know, anymore. It really, I think that we really underestimate just how toxic and evil alcohol really is. I just don't think we talk enough about it, really.
How much it impacts on somebody.
Yeah. And you know, depending on how woo-woo you want to get, you know, the origins of the word alcohol, you know, alcohol, which they say, you know, I'm sure you've heard people talk about that. But, you know, you're really getting into a different territory here where you really are looking at something other than the you can't be authentic, you can't be who you're meant to be with alcohol. It absolutely lowers your vibration, and you know, it I mean, what clever marketing to try to trick us into thinking that it's going to make us our best selves, you know, when literally the opposite is true.
And the tragic thing for me, because I, even though I've been sober for a long time, I look back, and for years before I realized I had a problem, alcohol did have a negative impact on me. And my son, I can remember, he was only little, you know, like really small. And I must have poured myself a glass of wine long before I thought I had a problem. And he said, "Mummy, I like it when you drink tea better." Yeah. And he picked up on the subtle change in my personality.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it, for children?
They don't understand.
I know. So, but they know that you're different.
They know that you're different. And getting back to what we were saying, you're not yourself, and the people around you, they're not with the person that they met and fell in love with or they loved. So in the end, I was on my own. I could drink 24/7 then. So when I came around from being unconscious, you know, I would just start drinking again. So if it was 3 a.m. and I was awake, I'd drink. It was my normality.
So who was kind of looking after you at this point then? Did you have anyone kind of looking out for you?
Then I was on my own. I can remember, like, my sister, because a lot of people, because you isolate yourself.
Yeah, of course.
And there were a lot of people thought that I was, you know, getting on with going to AA and stuff, but I just didn't used to see them.
Right.
And because, you know, I've caused so much chaos and hurt and stuff over the years, people were getting on with their own lives. But I couldn't, the other thing that I didn't realize before this happened was, by that stage, I couldn't sober up, first of all, because I couldn't face all the damage I'd caused, but also that the withdrawals were
Well, it's not safe, is it, to do that on your own anyway?
Safe, no. So it took a lot of years, and, you know, in those days, there weren't people like you talking about it. There weren't so many people out there that I could have turned to help, you know, like sober coaching and stuff like that. And it just got a hold of me over years. And like I said, I always thought I don't fit that profile.
No, exactly.
So it did almost take everything from me. And I know that every day, I know that I'm just so lucky to be here, because in rehab and, you know, speaking to people, that the statistics are so awful for somebody who gets that bad.
When you're that deep in the sinking sand, it's really tough, isn't it? So what changed for you then? What led to your last day one? How did you finally crack it?
Well, it's really interesting, because I'd done, you know, the Google search so many times before, you know, for help, and had bad experiences and different things. So for some reason this day, I can remember I was climbing the walls with the, you know, the horrendous impending doom anxiety. And before I, you know, went down the road, the route again of just drinking myself into, you know, coma, I looked for help online. I don't know what it was that day. It was meant to be, you know, like you said before, not wanting to be all woo-woo, but, you know, somebody was looking out for me because I found the most incredible, very, very, you know, unique treatment. Since I spent a day having this treatment, that's 8.5 years ago, I've never had a drink, since. And I spend a lot of time, you know, talking to people about this never giving up hope, because even I think there's a lot of people out there think, oh, you know, if rehab doesn't work, if Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work, then you know, that's it, you've got no hope. But there are so many
ways. Well, I mean, obviously we're gonna have to ask you what the treatment was, because everyone's gonna want to know.
I met a guy called Tim Fazakerly, who has invented the most incredible treatment. It's for addiction. It's also for things like PTSD and you know, all sorts of anything that where you've got negative emotions impacting on your life. But I found Tim Fazakerly, who created this technique that completely rewired my brain. And what he did, I was with him for a whole day. He dug out every single, you know, reason that had brought me down that route to where I was using something to either blot things out or cope with things or be a different person, be a more confident person. He treated all of that one by one. And then at the end of the day, he worked on alcohol with me. And his Tim Fazakerly's technique is now called Orpheus, Orpheus Mind Technologies. And I'm working, you know, hard to get it into the NHS, to get a trial with the NHS.
Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I'm guessing, obviously, I don't know anything about that technique. I'll look into it. But, you know, a lot of the work that I do with the matrix re-imprinting stuff I do in the family constellations, we do, I'm sure there are some similarities in the uncovering of the root causes and the limiting beliefs and all of this stuff. And one thing, I know this sounds hugely simplistic, but one thing that I've found always underpins this is a lack of self-love. Always just sits right there at the root of it all. It's absolutely key. And what I find fascinating is that, you know, you were in rehab and getting this, you know, support, as it were, conventional support. And, you know, I wonder whether that's the piece that is so often missing from those kind of treatments. Yeah. I don't know. I've never had the experience, but I've spoken to a few people, you know, who have been through rehab a few times. They relapse, they go back, then they stay sober for a little while, and then they go back again. But nobody's ever challenged them on just becoming, you know, my little phrase is become self-love curious, you know, because it's not as simple as going, oh, all right, then I'll love myself. Oh, hey, aren't I lovely? No, I don't think so. But you can become self-love curious. Nobody's ever challenged them to do that.
Yeah. And feeling good enough and all the rest of it. You're right. You're so right. And I mean, I was only in a couple of rehabs. So I'm sure, you know, that they're all different.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is, you know, often there's quite a few people in there. It's the time to really get that deep with each person. But you're so right. And this thing that I did with Tim, you know, even things that I hadn't been aware with from myself. But if I can just quickly explain, that one of the things about me, you know, maybe one of the reasons I started drinking years and years ago, I found it gave me a bit of confidence with, you know, colleagues and with doctors when I was in the pharmaceutical industry and at university. Was, you know, I had my background, you know, very working class. And one of the things that Tim uncovered was the impact that the particular school I went to, the free dinner queue, had on me. And, you know, you'd be in the queue to go for lunch with your friends, and then anyone who had free
would be separated.
Separated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Years I felt, you know,
talk about feeling. Yeah, exactly. Not included, not good enough. Not, I mean, God, honestly. And as you know, this expression that people listeners to this podcast will know, I end up quoting it most weeks. But, you know, it's that expression. It's not what happened to you. It's what you made it mean. Right.
Yeah.
Because there might have been other people in that queue. It didn't make it mean that. But for you, that impacted on you greatly as a child.
Massively.
And then you'd have gone through life recreating, your unconscious mind would have done, recreating other situations where you felt less than and not good enough. And, and one thing builds on another, doesn't it?
One thing builds on another. So he unpicked all of that. But then, like I said, at the very end of the day, we addressed alcohol and the whole, my whole relationship with it. And I'm so lucky that what he's done, and I, you know, touch wood, it never unravels, is that, you know, I don't even notice alcohol. I don't have to protect myself. I can spend time with people who, you know,
exactly.
So it was miraculous. And that's why, you know, 8.5 years later, I do the things I do. And you know, hats off to people like you and all the other people in the sobriety community who, you know, putting a spotlight on it much earlier on. It doesn't
have exactly to. We do not have to wait till we get to rock bottom.
Exactly.
we really don't. Well, it's a you know, it's a tale, isn't it, Susan? But how amazing that you're free from it, and you look amazing, and you're here to tell the tale. But not only that, you know, you're doing some amazing work right now. So just tell us a bit about the work that you're doing. Well, and we should mention your book, of course. Your book is From Rock Bottom to Sober Forever. Well, tell me a bit about that first. Tell me a bit about the book first, and then we'll go on to your other work.
So, as anyone who's been in that situation knows, you know, it took a few years. My main focus was on repairing relationships. And once the dust had settled and I realized how lucky I'd been, I thought, you know, how can I, it was more about giving this people this, you know, don't give up, because I know that I felt hopeless after my unseen time at through Alcoholics Anonymous and stuff. So I wrote the book, and then on the back of that, I was invited before the pandemic to give evidence at the House of Lords Commission on Alcohol Harm. And then it sort of, you know, things have built on that, that I found that I've been, you know, been able to, been given a voice to help people like me. Because it is, I mean, prevention is where, you know, really important. But there are people who find themselves, you know, a bit stuck. And so that's what I do. I do work with Alcohol Change UK.
Just remind us what, you know, you work with the Alcohol Health Alliance. Just remind me what that body is. Is that linked to, is that a parliamentary kind of body? I mean, what do they do?
The Alcohol Health Alliance, it's an alliance of there are dozens of organizations involved with alcohol. So for example, say the Forward Trust and Alcohol Action on Addiction will be one of those organizations, and Alcohol Change UK. So the Alcohol Health Alliance is a huge umbrella, and they get involved with things like, you know, the Commission on Alcohol Harm. They got that to the House of Lords, you know, people giving evidence, creating a report. I'm also part of the All Party Parliamentary Group on Alcohol Harm. So they, you know, it's MPs, Alcohol Health Alliance, charities, all trying to reduce the harms that alcohol.
Right. And do you think the message is, I'm sure it's foremost in your mind, but do you think the message is getting through that everything we've been talking about, that you do not have to wait till you're at rock bottom. You can absolutely make, you know, if you're drinking, you know, a couple of nights a week or something, but it's making you unhappy, you can make the choice to be free from alcohol. And what a cool choice that would be. Do you think any of that message is starting to drip through? Or is it still that thing of, oh, you know, well, what we do in this country is we all drink. We drink at weddings, we drink at funerals, drink at play dates. That's what we all do. Oh, and a few people just can't hold their beer. Terrible shame. Those people fall over and damage the health service. You know, I mean, I know I'm being flippant and, you know, a bit rude here, but that's actually the reality of it, isn't it? You know, you rock up to a GP and you say, actually, I'm worried about my drinking. They don't say, fantastic, you've noticed, wonderful, let me signpost you to some amazing content, you can be free. They just go, well, you look fine, but try and have an alcohol-free day every now and then. You know, never do they say, brilliant, you know, you've noticed.
No, you spot on there. But getting back to what you were asking, I think because of people like you, I think that there is this sort of gradual shift. I think that there are far more now, because people are talking about it, that there are far more, for example, alcohol-free alternatives.
Yeah, exactly. And that's making a huge impact, actually. It really is, isn't it? Because anything to do with alcohol is also going to be linked to the economy. And so, you know, thankfully, they can still make some money. But and also millennials, you know, a lot of young people are just, they're brighter than we were, right? They just, they want to look after their mental health and not waste their money.
There's definitely a shift there. But it's still tough. I mean, this new phrase, you know, that's come about in the past few years, sober shaming,
it certainly does. Well, in the workplace, I mean, as you know, a few of the coaches that I have trained are making fantastic waves in their own workplace settings, and you know, in fact, some of them work for the NHS. So we've done a few things for the NHS, which has been great. Very, very early days. And there are other coaches that I've trained who are within their own workplace settings are offering to deliver, you know, webinars and all of that. And I mean, you would think that would already be going on, you know, but it really has not been until very recently, because most kind of big corporate businesses and even the little ones, you know, they do offer stuff for their staff, you know, Pilates sessions and do you want to stop smoking and how to manage your time and stress management and, you know, what do you eat and have something on nutrition. You say to them, oh, can we do something on, you know, not drinking? Well, that doesn't quite fit, because, you know, we're all going out for drinks on Friday night. What do you mean you're not joining us? You know, I'm flipping subjects here, but while we're talking about workplace issues, I mean, what about the government? I mean, for God's sake, you know, the words government and, you know, drinking, is, you can't do have a sentence without the two words being together.
They go hand in hand. So, yeah, there's definitely a real challenge there when, you know, when you're talking about the people who make the decisions, and it's such a big part of their lives. But yeah, what I'd love to see, you know, people talk about that, don't mind talking about mental health, and companies are all into well-being and stuff. So hopefully, you know, so there will be a time when people can open up about their drinking and not be worried about being disciplined or whatever that is.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Because you're absolutely right. I had a client who was so nervous of asking for any help that she might need, because she was terrified of losing her job. I mean, you know, if you're holding your job together, you know, when you think back to when you were at rock bottom, and you know, at the beginning, you were holding you were working. If your job had gone, that's going to knock you to rock bottom even quicker, isn't it? It's going to be so unhelpful.
Yeah, but yeah. That I do see things, you know, changing really gradually. And just the fact that, you know, people like you were talking about it with your podcast and all the work you do, it is making a difference. And, you know, I never want to use my story to, you know, to scare people, because again, it just puts people off like, oh, she's on a soapbox and stuff. But, you know, just let's talk about it. Let's be more mindful. Let's think about it so that people don't end up, you know,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, what I do love about what you're doing is, you know, you absolutely are helping to build that bridge between what I've seen as, well, certainly up until fairly recently, as very much kind of two separate worlds. You've got your kind of AA world, your AA, your alcohol services, your rehab, and you've got your kind of, you know, the stuff I do, the drinking more than you want to, the sober curious, the well-being side. And it's almost like never the twain shall meet. And actually, that's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous, because I don't care how anyone gets sober. I really don't. It doesn't matter to me at all. Just do it, right? You know, and I know that there are some fundamental disagreements. There's some fundamental differences. I absolutely believe that you can be free from the alcohol trap. And, you know, lots of people who are in the kind of rehab AA world would say, no, you can't. It's one day at a time. And if God delivers you for another day, but you'll still be an alcoholic after 35 years. So we'll never meet on that point, you know, we've got to build a bridge, haven't we?
I have the same problem. You know, people, as far as I'm concerned, I had a problem. I don't now.
Exactly. You're a wonderful advocate for that, because in the past, you know, if someone spoke the way you have done about literally being grateful to be alive, having been absolutely at rock bottom, the assumption would be from absolutely everybody, before they bother to listen to your next sentence, the assumption would be, oh, well, she's an alcoholic then. Thank God I'm not that bad. Right. Next. Yeah. Literally. So the fact that you're sharing this and you're building that bridge is what people need to hear. Any of us can end up how you did. Of course we can, because it's not about who we are or what we were born with. It's about alcohol, right? Which is toxic and addictive.
It's about alcohol. It's toxic, addictive. But that's what I've always said. You know, I didn't choose it. I was addicted to it, but I'm not anymore.
Exactly.
And I have a new life, and I'm not doing it one day at a time.
You're free. Yeah.
I love it.
Well, fantastic, Susan. You're doing amazing work. I absolutely love it. It's really a really powerful story. And keep on doing what you're doing. I'm really impressed that you're in there. And I'd love to kind of get in and have a little conversation, but I don't know if they'd have me, because I'd probably be a bit loud. I don't know if I'd get on very well in Parliament. So well done, you.
Well done, you too. Honestly, feelings mutual. Thank you.
Well done, and we'll put the links in the show notes for you. And carry on doing everything you're doing. And let's speak. I mean, again. So let me ask you this question. So in a year's time, what would you like to have seen happen? Just, you know, give me one thing, two things that you would, you know, concrete things you'd like to have seen change. And then we'll put it in the diary and we'll speak in a year.
I'd love there to be a trial of my treatment in the NHS.
Yeah.
I think that would be massive. And I also, I would love to see you standing up in Parliament.
Oh, okay. There's a challenge.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll speak in a year and we'll see if that comes up.
Yeah.
I might even brush my hair. Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Susan. It's really great to chat to you. I appreciate it.
And you. You take care. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And thank you also to the work that you're doing. We didn't get to mention it really, but Susan is also doing some work around the Sober Code, which is a kind of code of ethics, if you like, for sober coaches to sign up to. And I'm very much part of that initiative, because, as you know, I train people to be sober coaches, not to work with people who are at rock bottom, but to work with those who want to stop drinking and want to live their best life without the booze. So I absolutely sign up to her code of ethics and the people that I train. If that is of interest, by the way, my next course starts October 6th and 7th. In terms of events, hope to see some of you at community. Really hope that will, that we'll get to meet. It'd be fantastic, depending on when you're listening to this, of course. And then we do have Sober by the Sea, still a couple of places on that, Saturday, August the 19th. Ahead of that, we've got our podcast, live podcast recording. That one is sold out unless there are any return tickets. Well, speaking of which, wasn't it great to see Laura Willoughby on the telly last week? She popped up on the telly talking about low and no alcohol options. Fantastic. Breakfast TV. Really cool. So anyways, we're doing that on August the 15th. But as I say, tickets are sold out for that one at the moment. August the 19th, Sober by the Sea. And then the date for the Champneys retreat, self-care and sobriety at Champneys in Tring, is going to be September the 30th to the 1st of October. So drop me a message if you're interested in that one, because I don't think it's live on the Champneys website yet. We will be putting in a Family Constellations workshop as well. You know, we touched in the interview with Susan there about how important it is to release you know, limiting beliefs, to actually let go of some of the stuff that's been holding us back, some of the root issues. And we absolutely can work with that in the work that I do with EFT, Matrix Reimprinting and Family Constellations. It has really, really powerful impact on being able to just change your mindset. It can literally be like flicking a switch where you can just change your mindset and know that, okay, stuff may have happened in the past. It might be trauma with a big T. It might be trauma with a little T. It doesn't matter. It's what you made it mean. You've heard me say that a lot. So do register your interest if you'd like to join us for one of our Family Constellations workshops, either online or in person. We'll be doing another one in Hertfordshire. Don't forget, drop me a message to let me know what your favourite podcasts are. When we get to the 250th episode, I'll do a few clips of some favourite episodes. So just drop me a message. You can find me on social media at Janie Lee Grace. Please follow me on Instagram if you haven't already, and Facebook and all the rest of it. And drop me a message. Let me know what your favourite podcast was, if you can remember. There's a lot now. If you're new to it, you can go back, scroll through. And if you can't even remember what your favourite podcast was, but you know who the guest was, but you remember the topic, then just let me know and I'll see if I can dig it out. I think it's quite fun when you pick up on a few clips from stuff you've done in the past, and it always hits differently, right? Because, you know, even if you've listened to something, you were at a different stage when you listened to it, perhaps. So yeah, it always really really hits differently. So anyways thank you again to Susan, my guest. Susan has also connected me with Sir Ian Gilmore, so that's a fantastic opportunity to chat to someone else doing amazing work in this situation, you know, as someone working in the health service, and also very much connected with Parliament, really, with some of the decision making. So looking forward to interviewing Sir Ian as well. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by the Sober Club. Please rate and review, and if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.